low win rates, excessive discounting, challenging negotiations. Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group. We're an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. This podcast is about one question: how to transform your team into peak performers. If you want the answer, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.
Welcome, everyone. Great to see everyone. And we're really excited and happy to be here to be able to sponsor the breakfast event and also have a really engaging conversation about a topic that I think a number of us have been working on and maybe struggling with a little bit over the last couple of years about measuring training, which has always been something, you know, we're focusing on, but specifically in this hybrid world. I'll just say a little bit about, so I'm a managing partner and director at Sales Readiness Group, and I also do a lot of facilitation still in the field and virtually, as well as in our collaborative learning environment. And I share that because we certainly saw a pivot over the last couple of years from about 80% in-person and 20% virtual and digital to a complete switch, right, over the COVID years and even coming out now. And we've grown the business as we've done that. And I think we actually have made a more engaging way of working with our clients through blended learning and some of the collaborative techniques we'll talk about. And so I think being able to share some of those stories and also joined by our panelists should make for an engaging discussion. So excited to be here. Welcome. Shannon.
Well, thank you, Ray. I'm Shannon DeRubens. I think I met so many of you yesterday. I get the privilege of supporting and enabling about 10,000, over 10,000 salespeople in the Microsoft US sales subsidiary as a transformation leader. And so what's interesting about this panel for me is I'm not necessarily building training interventions for our folks, but I make sure that they're there. And I work with those teams to help measure their impact and obviously get creative about how, especially in, since the pandemic, how we bring people along the learning journey when we have so many more challenges than we may have thought we would ever have. I'm excited to be here today, and I guess I'll just pass it over to you.
Thank you, Shannon. Good morning, everybody. My name is James Melser. I'm a senior regional director at Smartsheet. We are a public software company with about 3,000 employees. We provide a work management, collaboration, and automation platform to about 100,000 customers around the world. I've been in software sales for over 10 years. I've built, led, and helped train a number of different teams, both here in the U.S. and internationally. So I'm excited to be here and chat with everybody. I reside up in Seattle with these guys as well.
And, yeah.
Go Mariners.
Well, thank you for those introductions. So this is kind of a warm-up slash level-setting conversation. Could you all share some real-life examples of hybrid training that you have rolled out over the last 2 years? And if you think about those examples, why was hybrid the best bet for you?
That's great. Well, I can start with that. And yeah, I'll talk about it specifically, and it is interesting. We have the Northwest panel up here. That wasn't by design, but it's fun to share the stories. And full disclosure, we work with both Microsoft and Smartsheet, though haven't worked directly with Shannon. So it's great to hear from a different perspective as well. But I will share a story about a large tech client that we've worked with. And as you say, you know, why blended or why did virtual even come up? And so this was a transition where they had a business problem to solve about how do we get hire, how do we get access to key executives. It's a story that you may all have heard before. And we had to deliver it at scale. So we piloted in person, and actually that was the very last session that I delivered in person in Amsterdam, and flying back reading about this thing called COVID, right? And then there went instructor-led training. We pivoted to virtual. But we had a large audience to train, about 1,000 participants to train. And, you know, 12-person VILT sessions was just not going to work in that scenario. So I'm sure a lot of you went through this. We saw it with a lot of our clients. They tried to switch a lot of our clients to, hey, we need to take our ILT and just put it into a webinar, and we need to train people. We need to keep training going. And we saw a lot of that, right? But what happened? We got digital fatigue, we got disengagement, and it's really hard to see if anybody's doing anything in those sessions. And we can't really call it training. And it was good, you know, maybe that first quarter or two of COVID, but then we realized, well, we need to do things differently. Fortunately, we were already working on a collaborative learning experience platform. We partner with Intrepid, just as a shout out, but there are many other different platforms out there that do this. And we had migrated our programs to be able to deliver them in a blended. So think a little bit of a flipped classroom, micro-learning with assignments, online missions and skill application, and then a period of sessions that we would use to coach and reinforce those skills. So they're going through a learning journey over 4 to 6 weeks, and they're applying it to real life examples. And for me, that was the wake up. And I think for the participants as well, as they were working on real accounts, they were applying the skills in real time. And as James will share, as well as some of the experience, we could see if it was making a difference. We could see accounts that they were actually able to book meetings with or able to advance that deal and be able to measure the success. And so for us, that got past some of the digital fatigue and also kept the engagement and the real world skill application. And we could talk more about that as we go along. Hand it off.
Yeah, sure. So I think the biggest thing that I can personally speak to is one of the things I do sort of pro bono at Microsoft is I'm a ProSight trainer. And we talked about ProSight for those who were in my session yesterday. It's a change management methodology. A company that provides tools, IP, training, and a lot of research on change management. And Microsoft partnered with them. They're a partner and a customer, a big partner of ours for several years now. But anyway, we probably have at Microsoft the second largest ProSight training organization there is. We actually train on ProSight with our employees, and I'm a trainer. And it was a very much reverse classroom, in-person class environment, very hard to imagine that going to remote. But we had to. And during the pandemic, we learned a lot. The first thing we had to do was really work with the engineering team to get Teams, our platform for, you know, our Zoom. Microsoft Teams needed to have really elegant breakout rooms so that people could do their project work together. So we had to kind of partner with our technical people and think about things in a whole new way that you don't think when you're doing live delivery. But there were some advantages as well. And what I would say is the attendees felt that the class was great. We got great feedback and great results from our evals. But I noticed as a practitioner who was then working with people, I didn't feel the skills were quite there as much as they were when we had done in-person delivery. So that's something that we're still... It felt more like certification in name only, that people would come out of the training and still be a little stuck about how to get started, more so than they were with the live delivery where they did collaboration. So that's something that we've seen as a theme, is that we do signals polling and pulse polling of our employees, and they say that they want remote, online, on-demand training. That's all they want. That's their preference, strongly comes through the feedback. But they don't actually take it, and they're not learning as much from it. So it's one of those situations where we feel like we're fighting what they think they want and what they actually need to develop skills. So I don't know if others are facing that, but that's
really
a little bit about
that balanced perspective, because we are like just 2 years past COVID and we don't have it figured out yet. We haven't arrived.
Right.
So you're kind of describing both the pluses and the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. James, what say you?
Yeah, I've been involved in a number of hybrid training programs over the last couple of years, primarily through Ray and SRG, for both frontline sales leaders and sales reps. And it was pretty interesting when we engaged SRG to provide some sales training to one of our teams post. I think it was still, we were still kind of during the pandemic, but we were coming out of it, and we didn't really know what that training was going to look like, but we knew we had a problem that we needed to solve. And we worked with Greg and Ray and the team, and they said, hey, we've got this new platform that kind of is a combination of like live video learning and also kind of people doing some assignments, some homework on their own. I said, that sounds pretty interesting. Let's give it a shot. It's over a 6-week period. Like, seems like seems like it might be pretty interesting. And I think what I found were some of the things that made that hybrid program, I would say, probably more effective than what we would see in an in-person environment, were, like, at Smartsheet, we talk a lot about asynchronous work and synchronous work, right? So, like, you're doing your own work on your own at your own time, and then you're connecting live with people to collaborate and make decisions and discuss things. And I think the hybrid kind of model really captures that, right? You are allowed to work on some of the training on your own and complete some assignments and go through some videos, and then you come together with your group for some synchronous or kind of live interaction to reinforce some of the concepts and kind of land some of those key points. So I think those were definitely things that I thought were valuable. Also, the way that the platform that we used was configured, it was gamified. So I lead salespeople. They're fairly competitive. They like to see their name at the top of the stack rank. And so it helped us drive engagement through that kind of point scoring system. And we could also track who's engaging in this and who's not. And over a period of weeks, you have an opportunity to kind of course correct people, provide them with some feedback. And I think also that length of the program, right, having instead of people coming into a conference room for 2 days and just getting talked at, it's over a period of weeks, right? The level of retention and skill development that's happening, I think, is much more meaningful. So the hybrid model, I think, has been really successful for us for those reasons.
Great. So now that we kind of have introductions, roles, and some real-world examples, let's kind of dive into the meat of our discussion, and we'll make this a little more conversational. We'll jump in, ask each other questions, and so forth. But we have kind of this overarching question that's going to follow us over the next three topics. So your best example of hybrid learning over the last 2 years, think specifically, what were the sales challenges behind that? What precipitated the need to do that hybrid training?
We want to flip the order. We can start with James and work down.
Sure. Just jump in.
Sure.
And feel the spirit move you.
Yeah, I can start. So the number one example that comes to mind for me when I think about the sales challenges and the business problems that we were trying to solve for, Smartsheet is 17 years old approximately, and our DNA is fairly transactional in terms of how we engage with our customers. Like, we started out without a sales team. People just go on our website and buy licenses, and we've evolved significantly from there to hiring hundreds of sales reps and building a bunch of new products that are much more sophisticated. But we're still kind of dragging the business along this journey of shifting from a transactional kind of small deal culture to closing larger deals and larger transactions, right? And in order to show up on those earnings calls every quarter and say, hey, we met our growth goals, we needed to grow the average size of our transactions and start landing some bigger deals with all of our customers. Our sales reps didn't have the skills or experience broadly to be able to engage with those senior business leaders. They were used to talking with end users, people that were fairly low in the organization on the front lines, because that's often where our product initially gets adopted. And so in order to kind of try to meet those growth goals, really had to find a way to upskill those sellers and put them in a position to be able to engage successfully with the senior business leaders and align with some of the more, you know, kind of high value challenges that our customers were facing.
For Microsoft, I think the big challenge we faced that was accelerated by the pandemic, but truthfully was all the signals were there before, was I'll get more specific. Digital first selling, we talked about that in my session yesterday, but specifically prospecting. We have a really senior sales force, and we have, you know, a couple of dozen roles that could attach to an account. But what we realized during the pandemic really is that in order to meet revenue goals, really in today's market, everybody needs to be prospecting. In the minds of some of our sales force, that was an activity that would be long to more of a junior salesperson that, say, maybe sat outside the account team and did process-driven work. And so our culture change was really getting people to, first of all, embrace the idea of building a pipeline through prospecting directly as sales leaders and managers and senior salespeople, but also the tools for them to do it in an environment where it was all digital at this point because we couldn't have face-to-face. So that was the big challenge that we faced, and we're still working through that change. It's about 18 months in, and the way that we met the challenge was formal training, but also tons of practice that was led by marketing teams and subject matter experts who would come in and facilitate hands-on workshops with the sellers to actually go through their accounts in their tools and develop pipeline on a call, come out of that call with a couple $1 million worth of pipeline, and that got our leaders to buy in. So that was an example I shared yesterday in one of our biggest challenges.
That's great. Well, and I'll share as well. So I have the opportunity to speak to literally hundreds of sales leaders and sales enablement leaders every year, right, in our discovery process and hear about those challenges. And I will share, and some of you may feel this pain a little bit as well, which is you get the request, well, the sales leader, VP of sales, listened to some sales calls and doesn't think we do discovery, right? We're not asking enough discovery questions. We're jumping to the demo too quickly, right? Anybody hear this story before?
I've never heard that.
Too salesy.
What's interesting, though, and we'll get to the measurement, is how do you know if that's being addressed in your training or in your program? And so as a sales training company, one of the things I'm realizing is we're really more in the behavior change and the change management business, because we can provide great training, but unless it sticks, it really doesn't matter. So I love the opportunity to ask the why behind it. What are we going to look at that's going to be different in that case? So for the case of selling to key executives, are we booking more meetings with those executives, right? That's something you can measure. That's an interim, because there was a lot of talk yesterday about the love language of sales leaders, which I like that idea. The love language of sales leaders is we need revenue. We need to meet our goals, right? We need to grow pipeline. But the interim step is, are we booking meetings with the right people? And if we can go back and look at those calls, are we asking discovery questions? Now with AI and conversational intelligence, we can actually see if they're asking those questions. And we know that behavior change will produce the results, but don't expect it to be 30 days after the training. Oh yeah, everything happened. Let's track the interim measures along the way. We're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but those are some of the challenges we've run into, is what the presenting problem is really not at the core. We need to do that root cause, dig underneath, and then figure out what are we going to track and measure to determine if we're on the right track and if we're moving ahead.
What are the specific attributes that make the learning that you're speaking to engaging or impactful? Give us a flavor for what you would say are like those attributes.
You know, we've talked about this blended approach. And as a facilitator, the thing that I found really compelling and frankly really enjoyable working in these sessions is, instead of lecturing and then doing a quick breakout and hoping they get it and then getting back together, and you have, you know, if it's a 2-hour VILT session, you've got a pretty fast paced session anyway, you don't really know, versus now we have an opportunity to review the work throughout. So we're looking every day, we're looking in the platform, we're reviewing, there's a discussion board, so we're monitoring that, seeing the questions, and then flipping it so that instead of a 2-hour commitment, they have a 1-hour coaching session. We call them ARC sessions. So it's application, review, and coaching, where it's really that college office hour, right? Come in and talk to the professor, and you can talk about the challenges you may have run into. And then we're curating that content to bring in a couple of examples and say, well, let's look at, you know, something on James' team. Here's a great example of their plan to meet with this executive and the email that they're actually going to use. Let's talk about that. How might we improve it? And all of a sudden, the light bulb goes on. People love to critique each other, right? So they're jumping in. And this idea of collaboration and collaborative learning is, to me, a game changer, because they can do it in real time and they see the value instead of, you know, somebody up on stage lecturing and trying to provide that wisdom. So to me, that's one of the key attributes.
For us, it was really a direct line between what we're teaching you and your quota retirement. Sellers love language. How do I retire my quota as fast as possible or exceed it so I can get my Tesla or whatever is on their list or send my kids to college? That was the main thing that I'm, you know, just being sort of obvious there. But I think also just from that change management view, really thinking about desire on behalf of the person who's taking the training, they should be leaving a training with a new behavior. And one of the things that I've talked about probably too much to people at Microsoft who may want to listen or not is we're having dilution at our company because we are now calling almost anything a training. Somebody who is been in the company for a year and is a marketing professional holding a big call, going through a bunch of slides, that was a training. And what we're trying to do is get really back to being disciplined about what we define as a training. So that's a big challenge too, is proliferation, but also just timing. Like one of the principles that we try to apply is just this J3, right? It's training should be just in time. So I need it right now. It's right there for me. And we're always got people who aren't experienced trying to roll training out a month before the people are supposed to use it, right? And that doesn't work. But it should also be just enough. I'm an adult, so I don't learn the way that somebody would in elementary school. I'm not absorbing that. I'm absorbing two or three things. And it should be just for me, role-based as much as possible. And that's really tough because we have so many roles. So really just kind of meeting those three J's is the challenge before and during and accelerated, I think, during hybrid. So there were three challenges, but we're working on it.
So when I think about the best example of hybrid learning in our organization over the last couple of years, the things I think made it successful were, I mean, this isn't like, you know, probably rocket science, but the content has to be pretty good, right? Like I think that there's a number of training programs that I've been engaged in where like if the content just isn't that good. Like it's like you're learning from somebody that maybe doesn't actually have a strong perspective on the skill that they're teaching. So it's hard to learn in that environment, right? So I think the content has to be good. And I think the content in the hybrid world, what's interesting, kind of coming back to what Ray was talking about, like it's not only the content that the training program is providing, but you're actually getting content from the participants being entered into the platform, and that kind of becomes part of the training content that's discussed and kind of helps people connect on some of the key concepts, right? So, you know, the content and the frameworks around the different ideas that are being taught helps the participants kind of lean in and provide content around specific deals or opportunities that they're actually working on in real time that helps everybody else see how there's value in these skills in their day-to-day business right now. So I think the content is one component of it. The platform, I think, is another one. I think that the technology that we utilize with SRG and the collaborative learning platform was really easy for people to use. It was easy for them to log into. It was easy for them to work through the different modules, complete the assignments. There was some kind of social aspects they could like or comment or ask a question, right? Like, and in my organization, a lot of our sellers are kind of wanting to engage in that way, right? And it was also gamified. So it made it really easy for them to see where their scores are and also for our frontline sales leaders to communicate, hey, here's who's at the top of the leaderboard this week. Great job. We got another couple days to complete all the courses in this module before we have our weekly review session, right? So the platform itself, I think, is a key component, right? And then, you know, I think that the facilitation, you know, is also a big part of it. So not only, you know, the facilitator who's running those kind of weekly teach-back sessions and bringing in the content from the homework that the participants did over the week to highlight good examples and start some conversation around how people are applying the skills in real deals that they're working on. But also, I think that kind of an X factor for us was the involvement of kind of our frontline sales leaders in helping drive engagement and awareness and coaching people up on getting involved in the program. And, you know, I think like the love language of sales leaders, yeah, like we're definitely big fans of retiring quota, But I think that what you'll find is that a lot of sales leaders are very passionate about developing their people. And so when there's an opportunity that they see to engage their people in a program where there's actually meaningful skill development that's going to help them develop their careers, whether that's at their current company or the next job that they have 10 years down the road, I think you'll find that a lot of sales leaders will want to lean in and participate in that, right? So I think that that's part of the facilitation factor as well.
Okay, so what were the quantifiable results and or key takeaways for leadership?
Let me go first.
Sure.
For us, right, like coming back to the challenge that we were trying to solve for, we wanted more big deals, right? We wanted to engage with senior leaders in our customer base, find high value problems to solve, and ultimately drive a large transaction. And in the large deal category that we tracked, we saw a significant increase in new pipeline creation among the people that participated in the program, and ultimately closed one business. It's hard to point at specific deals and say, yep, if we wouldn't have done this training, we wouldn't have got this deal over the line, right? There's a lot of kind of factors that play into it. But when I look at the numbers, I would say, you know, probably a sophisticated guess around the ROI of the program that we did is over 12 months, 10x. Like, I think it's pretty easy to justify the return on the program because of the development that we saw among our salespeople, right? And I think the other, you know, quantifiable results that I look at, right, I look at that audience of reps that participated in that program 12 months ago. How are they performing today? Pretty well, right? Like, a lot of them are in at the top of the leaderboard. They're receiving awards for, you know, quarterly attainment, and they're leaders in our business. So, you know, I think that that's another result that I look at, right, in terms of what the return is on the investment into those individual people. So that's kind of how I would think about the results for us.
I think that we do the typical, which is sort of coverage, training completion, which doesn't tell the whole story, but that's our top level scorecard metric, particularly for compliance related training. But other things as well, like I have said this a few times now, one of the reasons why our digital first selling program was successful is because every boot camp or workshop was adding pipeline. And so at the end of half a year, we had hundreds of millions added to our pipeline. And that makes a leader care about a program. So, I mean, I'm not saying it was easy because these teams did boot camps 4 or 5 times a week. But also what we were able to do, and I should have mentioned this in the last question, you made me think of it, is bring food to hunger. Like, we have a lot of products and solutions, and some of them had more pipeline issues than others. And so having the team go and conduct these sort of guerrilla-type workshops with those areas, we can see immediate improvement to pipeline in certain solution areas by having them focus like that. And so that's success without controversy, right? Revenue is always going to go on the scorecard, but when we have a learning or a training or enablement program that's driving revenue, that sings. And so I think that was the biggest one that was quantifiable, that that was successful and repeatable for us.
Yeah, and I think so. The bring food to hunger thing, right? Like, you got to, like, the training has to be applicable for the audience. Like, one example of how, as a sales leader, I think about that, right, is SRG offers two different hybrid learning programs for sellers. One is kind of more fundamental selling skills, basic, you know, just understanding of the sales process and prospecting and different things like that. One is more focused on selling higher value solutions, engaging with senior business leaders. That allows me to align the training that I'm offering to the segment in which my sellers are working in and their experience level. So the fundamental selling program, if I try to offer that to somebody who's working in our large enterprise division, they're probably going to be very bored and disappointed and say, this is a waste of my time. If I offer the same program to somebody who's working in our emerging markets or SMB division, right? They're going to be very excited and hungry for that content, right? So that's an example of kind of how we would align the training content with the specific needs of the audience.
How much of those recommendations are sort of leadership or management driven versus where you seek input from the salesperson themselves on what they think would be valuable?
Yeah, I mean it's tough, right? Like, you know, you're kind of balancing the needs of the audience of sellers, and then you're trying to balance the needs of the business and what senior leadership is asking you to do, right? So I don't know. I've kind of taken like a little bit of a guerrilla approach to it and just tried to figure out like, okay, what does my audience actually need and how can I go find that? That's kind of how we stumbled into the program that we ran with SRG last year for our sellers, right? So, you know, I think, you know, when I think about my relationship with our sales enablement team, right? Like, I think that like there definitely are challenges, like they're being asked to run at specific goals and I have my agenda. What I think we're starting to see some success is like just leaning into the one-on-one relationship and just having regular meetings and developing a dialogue so that we can actually understand each other a little bit better and they actually have a better, more kind of, you know, texture around like what I'm looking for and what I'm interested in. So I don't know, it's definitely challenging, right? Like you're kind of collaborating across two departments that while it seems like they should be very tightly aligned, oftentimes that's not the reality, right?
No, and again, the honesty around here's what's working and here's what we're still trying to figure out is really helpful. So with that, I would love to take some questions from the audience on this topic. Certainly something maybe stood out to you. Yeah, I see a hand in the back.
Yeah, thank you, Shannon. I appreciate the feedback in regards to the pipeline build. Question for you, beyond that, did you measure velocity? Did you measure close point rate? And then, I guess to preface that, in order to measure those things, you have to have very good inputs in your CRM system to be able to weigh those right. So just wanted to kind of ask that big question.
I don't want to turn this into an ad for Dynamics 365 CRM. Yeah, absolutely. So I won't get too specific, but we added a few hundred million to our pipeline, and we definitely track how much of that we close. And by the end of last fiscal, we closed about a third of it, maybe 27% of it, which is great because, you know, pipeline, you know, you don't close it right away. It can take a while sometimes. So definitely that, you know, that allows you to have the conversation and continue the conversation, results like that. And that's not a typical training metric, right? You can't always do that, drive revenue in a learning event. But if you can, or you can attach it to some other really important scorecard metric, like for another one for us would be customer and partner experience, our customer satisfaction with Microsoft, our products, our account teams. That one matters a lot to salespeople because it's part of their scorecard. And then the other one that we've been looking at a lot that's kind of ancillary and we're still refining it is customer and partner time. We can look at workplace analytics that tell us how much certain roles are collaborating with each other. It looks at data from like Teams and Outlook and calendaring. So it's not perfect. It's not going to capture a phone call or any single email that you might exchange with a customer, but we can get a pretty good idea. And so that's one that's new that we're looking at a lot. And since so much of our training and enablement is about giving the seller back time, teaching them a tool that's going to give them more time to spend with customers, whether it be virtual or otherwise, that one's kind of new and emerging and very important to leadership. And we track it pretty closely now.
If I could just tag on to that as well. I think backing up and asking the why again of what are we trying to accomplish and what can we track? So some, you know, systems are very different. Organizations are very different, even in what they can measure. But, you know, in a prospecting workshop, for instance, I don't care if they're tracking it on a sticky note, but I want to know their conversion rate and the number of meetings they've booked. And if we can't come out of that program and show that there's an improvement in the number of meetings over that period of 60, 90 days, then we're missing the mark. We're doing something wrong. So I think those interim measures are really important because, sure, we'd all love to grow pipeline, But that takes, especially if you have a 12-month sales cycle, how do you calculate win rates when you're not going to, you know, the whole org is going to be different by the time you get to measure whether that outcome was achieved. But I think there's some things like number of new meetings. We have a negotiation program. I love that one because you can see, are we reducing the number of concessions and discounts? That's something pretty discreet. We had a pilot group that became the top performing organization because we just tracked, hey, how much are you giving away for free without getting anything in return? And that was pretty easy to benchmark against others. So I think there are some of those discrete things when we look at, are we improving the velocity? How long are deals taking one stage to another? Are they converting from one stage to another? And are we accomplishing those things that we know in the future will pull through to, you know, more closed business?
Great. Thank you for the questions. Do we have another one?
My question is also for Shannon. I really resonated with what you were saying, Shannon, around your sales folks or your employees that are like, yeah, we love e-learning, go with e-learning. And, you know, if you're only relying on a reaction survey of people saying, like, yes, this was 5 stars all around, if that's your only success criteria, like, that's obviously a problem because you don't know if it's actually moving the needle of what you're tracking. So I guess I resonate with that friction. So what's your approach to that friction of, hey, yes, this is what you think you want, or this is what you want, but is it really what you need, and how can you get the buy-in, if that's important to you, or do you just kind of like force it?
Thanks for asking that, because it is, I wasn't sure that that was the experience elsewhere, but certainly I think when you get that survey and you're pressed for time and you have 8 million things to do, you're going to say anything that's going to get you more time back, right? And there's, that skews things. So what he's saying is, when I said that we would collect quantitative feedback from thousands of employees, and it would overwhelmingly say, yes, give me online, on-demand, remote, not even virtual led training, right? Which really was, there was some noise there. And so I think what we do at Microsoft, and I'm not trying to make this a commercial for change management either, but what we have realized is that training isn't going to get you all the way there, period. You need experienced people also focused on adoption and practice and better awareness and really dissecting things for the why. Like Ray was saying, if you can connect that to what is important to that role, then the training is something they want to go to, right? And so that's what we've been trying to do, but we're still figuring it out because, you know, in a way, people are still, we're just starting to travel again. I think this is my first conference set post-pandemic, and we don't have all the answers yet, but I definitely can tell from my role that the way people are responding to those questions are not, it's not, there's dissonance between what the skills that, because they're also saying, I didn't develop my skills during COVID, right? So we have to listen to that, but at the same time, input has to be compared, I think, along other criteria to make sure that our people are still getting developed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people know how to respond to that question other than like, what's the easiest, lowest friction way for me to participate in this, right? Because this is all new with everybody being distributed. But I mean, I can speak from pretty recent experience, right? Like we struggle as a company trying to figure out how to onboard and train our thousands of employees remotely now, right? And it's hard. And I just hired 30 people at the beginning of the year in my organization, 30 brand new sales reps that are fairly junior. Candidly, our onboarding experience was mostly all just go watch a big library of videos. It didn't work very good. And so we're paying the tax now because we didn't, you know, have a meaningful solution in place to get those people, you know, upskilled and trained. And the best way to solve that problem that I've seen is this kind of hybrid model, right? Where like There is, yes, you got to do some homework and watch some videos on your own, but you're checking in on a regular basis. There's a kind of coach back session. There's some real live examples. You're working with a group, like a cohort of people. Like, it seems like that may actually be more effective than the way that we used to, which is like come all into a room for 2 days and we'll just kind of do a live version of the video, right? So it's definitely a challenging problem to solve, but it seems like this hybrid thing is definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, and I will just share a metric. We went from, and I know if people track their online, you know, pure asynchronous e-learning rates, completion, it's not a great story, right? And in this case, we went from less than 10% completion to, for a pilot group, a 92% completion of that program. And I think partly because of, as James mentioned, you know, a little bit of the peer pressure, a little bit of the visibility, and they were also getting value, right? So there's a point we have to be ruthlessly relevant with the content. It has to fit. And if they can get together and say, oh yeah, actually I took something away from that because I heard about Shannon's deal and mine's just like that. Now we're creating a reason for them to want to attend, but we need to be really sensitive to their time, right? And not taking them away from selling, as we've all heard, like we have to make sure those sessions and that training is very spot on and very relevant.
Well, yeah. With that, Ray, I'll give you the last 2 minutes as we wind the panel down. Time is yours for that.
Great. Well, again, I appreciate it. And thank you to Shannon and James for joining the panel and for all of you for being here bright and early to kick things off. And I think, I mean, this has been a fascinating, I always learn things from these discussions. So it's great to kind of hear and love to hear from more of you. You know, I think this is a really important topic going forward. We're going to continue to evolve and figure out both how to make that this virtual world more relevant and more effective, and how to track it, right? How to track that success. And so I think some of the ideas, hopefully, that we've discussed today can be relevant. The other thing I'll mention as the sponsor, I guess, of the breakfast, but we are offering these sessions as public workshops. So we have open sessions if you want to kind of taste test, want to try it out, or put a couple sellers in. So we have one on our management program. So our whole High Impact Sales Management Academy is available on this collaborative learning. We're offering one on managing performance coming up this fall, and then a workshop on selling to key executives, I think, right after the first of the year. But if you haven't met Greg Stewart, he's my colleague and our VP of Business Development. If you'd like to talk more about this, or we have a couple of promotional seats we can make available, love to have that conversation. So thanks again, and thanks, Dana, for moderating.
Great.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer, plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.